Committee. Today is Wednesday, April 1st, 2009. We have a quorum to conduct business with us. Our Senators Huggins, Wagner, French, and myself, Wilikowski. We expect others to be joining us shortly. And today we'll be holding hearings on a number of people who have been selected for appointment by the governor. And we'll start out with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and Judge Peter Froelich. And you're here in the room. And
yes, thank you.
I hope I got your name right. If you wouldn't, please put yourself on the record. And if you'd like, please give us an opening statement, and then we may have some questions for you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, committee members. And I appreciate the chance to appear before you today. My name is Peter Froelich, and as you know, I've been reappointed by the governor to continue as a commissioner at the Limited Entry Commission, Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I began there in August of 05 after retiring in January of that year as the district court judge here in Juneau. I'm here today just to say a little bit about myself and my qualifications, and also to talk a little bit about the commission and what we've been up to lately. I'll try to keep it as brief as I can. I know your time is short. I see there's four other confirmations and a bill. I was talking to staff about whether it was better to be at the end of that list or the beginning, but so anyway, I want to fill in a little bit between the lines my resume that you have before you. I came to Alaska from the upper Midwest in early 1970 and worked construction jobs in Anchorage, crab fished and tendered salmon on a couple, well, mainly one vessel out of Kodiak, and having little to do in the winter in those days, I made my way to Juneau to work for the session in 73, and have made it my home ever since. Since that session, which to my dismay turned out to be, I believe, the shortest session ever, I remember John Rader was the president of the Senate, but since that time, I worked in this building in various capacities for 16 more sessions, moving from downstairs in the legislative mailroom to upstairs in what was then the Attorney General's office, stopping at the House Judiciary Committee and House Research Agency was actually in a different building, and then back to the AG's office where I represented the commission for about 3 years in the late 70s. And during the 80s, I fished commercially for salmon for three seasons, qualified for a non-transferable hand troll permit that I had to give up to accept the appointment to the commission in 05. The longest position I held was 16 years as district court judge here in Juneau, covering all of northern southeast. And since starting at the commission, I've taken a couple of administrative law courses down at the Judicial College. The second one as part of the faculty. I'm active in the community, serving on a couple boards and a couple organizations that take probably a few hours a week, but listed them on my resume. But I'm also on one statewide board, which is a nonprofit, Partners for Progress, promoting and operating therapeutic courts. So in summary, I would submit that I'm uniquely qualified to serve on the commission because my combined experience commercial fishing, couple different regions of the state, couple different fisheries, having served as an attorney for the commission, working as a district court judge, and now having worked as a commissioner for the last 3.5 years. So enough about me, a little bit about the commission. One of the biggest priorities that we've had since I've been there has been to reduce our adjudication caseload, and we have been successful in doing that and are continuing those efforts. And I provided you through staff with a graph that shows how we've reduced the pending cases from 250 when I started to about 88 now, so about two-thirds reduction. And we're continuing on that. We've also been able to eliminate completely general fund appropriation to our operations as of FY08. And that's because of passage of legislation in 05 that allowed us to restructure our fees, raising the maximum and creating more different categories. And as a result, we now generate about $6 million a year in fees $4 million of that, so two-thirds funds our operations. The balance, $400,000, goes to the Fisherman's Fund to cover injuries to fishermen, and about $1.6 million goes to the Division of Comfish for partial funding of fisheries management. Also, we've been successful in holding down our costs. We've had no increase in our operating budget since FY07 and no new positions since FY04. Finally, we're working hard to get into the computer age to help help us and fishermen do what we need to do faster and better. And a big example of this is the e-landings program, on which we're working with the Division of Commercial Fisheries and NIMS to convert fish tickets to computerized system for instant data capture. And on that, we do have a capital budget request for about $138,000 for the machines that would barcode permit cards to enable that to work. But on a much smaller scale and more immediate effect, we started in January of this year with an online licensing program. And there's annually about 20,000 permit renewals, 10,000 vessel licenses. And through this LEON program, Limited Entry Online, people can now renew permits and vessel licenses and also purchase new interim use permits and new vessel licenses online. And so it's a lot easier for everybody, them and us. And as of today, we've had over 1,300 people use that. We've got kiosks for that purpose, besides our Juneau office, Anchorage, Kodiak, Sitka, Cordova, and Homer. And we're installing this month kiosks in Ketchikan and Craig. So in closing, then, I just want to mention our website, the second page, the brown background that I provided to you before the hearing here. This is a much-used and much-praised research tool. Fishermen and agencies alike use it. We get between 3 and 4 million hits a year on this. And the address is up on top, and I'd encourage you to browse through it or have your staff do that. Our annual reports that we come out with to you in hard copy, although we're reconsidering that, is also online. I brought the last one and then the first one for when I started, 07 and 04. So that's pretty much what I had to say, and I'm open for any questions that committee members may have.
Thank you, Judge Frelick. And let the record reflect that Senator Stedman has joined us, as has Co-Chair McGuire. Are there any questions for Judge Frelick from the members on the committee? Senator Wagner.
How long on your online services, let's say I'm in Kenai or Homer, and I apply for a vessel license, what's the turnaround on that?
It'll go in the mail the same day that you key in.
And put Ricky and Associates out of business.
Well, we've talked to him about that, and he is actually using it sometimes, even in our office. But
yes, Senator French.
More of a comment. I just want to thank Mr. Judge Frelick for putting his name forward to serve again. It's an extremely impressive resume. The combination of the legal background, the fishing background, and 4 years on the commission, I'd say the state of Alaska is lucky to have you stepping forward. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. And let the record reflect Senator Stevens had joined us. Any other questions by the committee? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Judge Frelick, what is your number one challenge in this position?
I think it goes back to this chart, getting rid of some of the, we have cases that have been pending in various levels of the adjudication process for literally decades. And so we're trying to get rid of them, and it's not easy. So the hardest, it's like, as the attorneys here may know, it's kind of like, you know, the doggy files are the ones that you look at the last. So that's the big challenge as I see it.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and just one wild card, Judge Freilich. I see in June and July of 95, you were at Oxford.
Right.
And I recall that Mr. Oppenheimer went to school there once upon a time. And I think he tried to poison his tutor, Mr. Blackwell. Do they have a plaque or anything up there for Mr. Oppenheimer at Oxford?
Senator, through the chair, I didn't notice it.
Okay. Thank you.
Great, thank you. And yeah, I just want to say, Judge, your credentials are very impressive. And for commissions and committees, it's just good to know that we have people with credentials like yourself who are willing to step forward and do these things. So I'm going to open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone online wishing to testify? Don't have anyone. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? There's no one in the room. We'll close public testimony. Any other questions, comments? Yes, Senator Wagner.
Yeah, just one thing as far as adjudication caseload. How much of that caseload is dealing with interim use permits? Any idea?
Well, Senator Wagner, through the chair, if you, I know you're probably familiar with so I'm not sure if I understand your question. Everyone who has a pending appeal, whether it's before a hearing officer or the commission, is able to get an interim use permit and keep fishing, even though they've been denied a permit, which, and therein lies the rub. I mean, that's kind of a big part of what keeps it all.
That's still the bulk of your load.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, what's the will of the body? This is a confirmation, and if the committee wishes to refer this on, we'll need a motion to do so.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we pass Mr. Freilich's name on to the full body for confirmation.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, seeing none, you're referred on to the full body for confirmation.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Committee.
Okay, and we'll pass around a sign-up sheet. While we're doing that, let's get the next confirmation. Person up for confirmation is John Norman for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Mr. Norman, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm on the line.
Great, thank you. And we've been joined by Senator Stevens, if I haven't said that already, and we have the full Senate Resources Committee is here. And if you could please put yourself on the record, and I know that we all have heard from you many times over the years, but if you could just briefly tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wish to continue to serve on the AOGCC.
Certainly. Thank you, likewise, for the opportunity to appear before you. And I'll begin by telling you a little bit about myself, and then we'll be pleased to take questions. I'm a 40-year-plus resident of the state of Alaska. I came up here following my education and time in the Army, and came to Alaska with an oil company working in exploration. And then was recruited into the Department of Law at that time, and served several years in the Department of Law. And at that time, I was legal counsel to this commission and also to the State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources. Following that, I practiced in private practice of law for a fair number of years, and have worked throughout the state from Ketchikan to Barrow and all across the state, Western Alaska. I've represented a number of private landowners, native corporations, some oil industry. I've worked in timber, public land law, and a good deal of oil and gas law. And 5 years ago, I was appointed to the commission to fill out a vacancy of a commissioner that had left the commission at that time. And so that's what brings me before you today. During that time, I've worked hard to try to make a positive contribution to the commission. It is my belief that the commission here in Alaska is respected not just by industry here and others, but across the United States. And I say that from the perspective of having had the opportunity to serve on several national organizations among the oil-producing states, and Alaska has an excellent reputation across the United States in that regard by virtue of having a good regulatory structure, fair but tough regulations. Here at the Commission, our responsibility is prevention of the waste of Alaska's valuable hydrocarbon resources, and then the protection of correlative rights, which is simply a way of saying the right of each owner to have a fair chance to produce their share of the resource. We also work to ensure greater ultimate recovery. We have tools here to require claims to be filed and reviewed with the Commission as reservoirs are produced to ensure that the maximum amount of resource is produced and that nothing is wasted or left in the ground or produced in the proper way. Another charge that the Commission has is to promote good oil field practices, and this translates into safety. It translates into environmental protection and generally a good, proper environment in our oil fields. We administer the federal underground injection control program in the state of Alaska insofar as it pertains to the production of oil and gas. And we're currently now working on interacting with the national EPA with regard to carbon capture and sequestration and the evolving new set of regulations there that would require CO2 to be re-injected into the ground. And we're providing input in that regard on a number of fronts. The Commission has a staff here. We operate a fairly lean operation. We have 26 employees. We have including five petroleum field inspectors, and two of which are generally on call on the North Slope at all times on duty 365 days a year. And we also have a presence in Cook Inlet, two actually based in the Kiski that are on call there. And over the past several years have implemented a number of steps here to tighten up our own statute. We came before you as the legislature in 2007 with a fairly comprehensive review of Title 31, and with the tools you've given us, we're now at work on our regulations. We've implemented some regulatory initiatives in the area of safety, well control, things to make sure that we do not have a blowout, for example, in any of Alaska's oil fields. We are constantly alert to the need to be responsive to the industry and to the public. When asked who we serve, why, of course, our answer is we work for the representatives of the people of the state of Alaska, and that's the way we view it, and that's our mindset. But at the same time, there are companies interested in doing business in Alaska, and we try to ensure them that there is a commission here that understands their business. There's no learning curve here. We know what they do. We know what they should do. We expect them to obey our laws, and we're prepared to take quick action if they don't. And if they do, when they do, we also understand that time is money. And so there is a sense of urgency here that at this commission concerning processing of permits and getting them turned around and out the door. I think on our most recent performance measure, the average permit here for drilling is 7 to 8 days, generally under 10 days, sometimes more, but and we try not to push it down below that because we do not want to have a performance measure be the cause of loss of quality of review of any permit. So we give attention to that, but things don't sit here. Once one person is finished with them, it moves to the next office, and then we try to attend to that. My general impression here as I think I can call myself now a longtime Alaskan. My children were born here. My son went to school at Fairbanks, and this is my home, and so why I would want to do this. First of all, I enjoy it. I enjoy the work. My background is in geology and law, and I believe that this is a very important agency. It makes a big difference to have an agency that can intelligently regulate the industry that provides most of the revenue for our state of Alaska. And to my knowledge, things are generally going very smoothly here. But I think at that point, I will stop and see if there are any questions.
Commissioner, thank you very much. And I guess I would note by your bar number, you've been an attorney for 40 years. So I'd say you qualify as a long-term Alaskan. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for some people out there. But any questions for Commissioner Norman? Yes, Senator French.
I just want to say thank you, Mr. Norman, for your service. You are the second person we've had today with a stellar resume, and the state of Alaska, frankly, is lucky to have a public servant like yourself working for her.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you. And John, your senator here, thank you so much for all your work through the years, and in particular, your guidance for me in early years, especially getting my arms around oil and gas policy, and just appreciate your service for the state, and really glad to see you reappointed.
Thank you, Senator McGuire.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, hey John, it's Charlie Huggins here. I have one question that has a little bit to do, I think, with viscosity. Can you explain to me how DRC's law works?
well, that is not one that I studied in law school.
April Fool's, John. That's
Well, all right. You impressed me with that question. Darcy's law is the law by which you calculate permeability, the ability of, let's say, a block of sandstone to allow a fluid to pass through it. And so it has three variables, as I recall. I'm reaching way back when I did it with a slide rule hanging down my hip. But in any event, it's the method by which you measure the ability of a reservoir rock to allow a fluid to pass through it. If it doesn't have permeability, then it's called tight rock. And if it has good permeability, it's measured in Darcy's, or generally what are called millidarcies, a thousandth of a darcy.
hey, John, could you send that to us in writing so we can read it?
All right.
Thank you for the question, Senator.
Any other questions? Okay, let's open it up for public testimony. I don't believe there's anyone online. Is there anyone online wishing to testify on this matter? No. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, we'll close public testimony. Is there any further comments or questions from the committee? Is there a motion? Yes, Senator McGuire.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we send the name of John K. Norman on to the full body to serve as to continue to serve as an oil and gas conservation commissioner with individual recommendations.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? Okay, Mr. Norman, Commissioner Norman, thank you again for your service, and we'll forward your name on to the full committee, the full body for a vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, next up, we've got Big Game Commercial Services Board, and let's start out with Dirk. Please tell me with your last name, Dirk. Is it Nickish?
Yeah, Dirk Nickish.
Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, could you say your last name again, please?
It's Nickish.
Nickish, okay, great, thank you. And welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And if you could please put yourself on the record and tell us a little bit about why you'd like to be on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Okay, well, my name is Dirk Nickish. My wife and I run a small air taxi,
in northern Alaska. It's a pretty small family-run business. And basically my interest in this is we're seeing increasing issues in both the transporter and the guides, and conflicts with other hunters and users in the area. And we, we run a small business, and I hope that the opportunity will exist for my kids to also be in this industry if they so choose. And I believe the best way of doing that is by preserving the industry today.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I see that you own and operate 135 air taxis.
No, it's a Part 135 air taxi.
Part 135. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Oh, A130. I'm sorry. Okay. Any questions from the committee? Yes, Senator French.
Thanks. I'll just jump in. Mr. Nikish, maybe just tell us, I take it you have not served. You're applying for the first time to serve on this board. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you've got the time available to serve?
Yes, I do.
You're located now in Coldfoot. That's where your business is?
Yes, we have a business in Coldfoot, and then we also have a cabin in Fairbanks.
And the business is an air taxi service, mostly for hunters, hikers, and so forth out of the Coldfoot area?
Correct.
And where are the meetings held for this board? Do you know? Are they in Fairbanks or Anchorage? Or?
They alternate. The spring meeting was here in Fairbanks. The winter meeting this last year was in Anchorage.
And I know it's sometimes awkward if you haven't served, but can you tell us a little bit more about what this board does, the Big Game Commercial Service? Are you adjudicating transgressions? That is, are you looking into people that maybe have done wrong by their licenses? Are you granting licenses, revoking licenses? Just tell me a little bit more about what this board does.
Well, the board reviews questionable applications. There is some adjudication, and right now the board is also looking at consulting with the DNR about guide use areas on DNR property, and also looking at additional regulations to control user conflicts with transporters.
That's all the questions I have. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nikish. Thanks for putting your name forward.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah. Thank you. Dirk, when Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla, my assumption, you're in the seat for one of the transporters, is that correct? Is it an allocation of seats?
That is correct. I would be, there are two transporters on the board.
Okay, and who's the other transporter?
The other transporter is Leif Wilson from Tok, Alaska.
Okay, so just if you could just give us an oversight up in the area that you fly in, what sort of issues that you bumped in over the last two or three years that might be germane in experience?
Well, first of all, I've flown through a vast number of areas of the state over the years. And the current issues in our area are pretty similar to issues in other parts of the state, in that the state areas right now are seeing huge numbers of guides operating in one area. And there's getting to be a fair amount of conflicts between both guides and resident hunters and other guides. And the other issue, certainly out to the west of us, is there's a tremendous issue with the transporters and the number of hunters that they're dropping off and the areas that they're using, both with resident and particularly with subsistence users.
Right. And could you just, if I might, Mr. Chairman, if you could just kind of enlighten us on the difference between an outfitter and a transporter?
Well, the big difference between, the big line is really drawn between a guide and a transporter. And a transporter does not actually place somebody in the field with the client. They strictly provide transportation services to people into the field. And there's also kind of a differentiation between strictly an air taxi and a transporter. And a transporter is a person that, on top of moving the person, first of all, advertises for hunting clientele and also charges a different fee schedule for hauling that person, as well as providing additional information to them about where to hunt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay, let's open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone online wishing to testify on Mr. Nikish? Okay, hearing none. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify on regarding Mr. Nikish's appointment? Seeing none, close public testimony. Is there any further discussion by the committee? Is there a motion?
I'll make one.
Yes, Senator McGuire.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the name of Dirk Nikish onto the full body with individual recommendations to serve as the, what's the official title, to serve on the board of Big Game Commercial Services.
Okay, is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Okay, Mr. Nikish, we'll move your name onto the full body for a confirmation vote, and thank you for volunteering to serve the state.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, next up, we'll have Betty Jo B.J. Schmitz. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. And do you go by Betty Jo or?
B.J., usually.
B.J., okay. B.J., would you please put yourself on the record and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Big Game Commercial Services Board?
Thank you. My name is B.J. Schmitz. I live between North Pole and Salcha, Alaska. We live on a farm. My husband's a teacher. I've served on the board for the past 4 years and started kind of flat-footed and have learned a lot through a steep learning curve. I feel like I'm just kind of getting an idea of what's going on with the issues of the guiding and transporting industry and would like to continue on serving. I'm a hunter myself. And I've worked with the State Fish and Game and Becoming an Outdoors Woman program teaching courses. And not a guide, not an outfit or anything like that, but interested in maintaining the good hunting experience in Alaska while maintaining the guiding distance, too. We try to look at it from both sides and be a good representative of the public.
Okay, thank you, BJ. And open it up to the committee for any questions. Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Schmitz, thanks for putting your name forward. I really appreciate it. Maybe you can just tell us what you've enjoyed about the commission in the last few years and which parts are not so enjoyable.
Well, it's been real fascinating getting to know a lot of the guys and transporters that have come to the meetings and just cheering them out and understanding what their life and their situation is like. The hard part is just kind of trying to catch up with everything and understand how the regulations work and affect people and finding out sometimes when you say something that seems so cut and dried on one side, how later on it affects people in ways you didn't anticipate. But it's been an interesting experience all the way around.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, and Betty Jo, Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. In your estimation, looking to the future, what effect will guide areas, exclusive guide areas, have on your commission?
We've been working for the past couple of years talking about this on state land. Of course, the federal properties, except for BLM, already have the guide use areas allocated out. What's happened is that pushed a lot of people into the state land and a lot of conflict in some of the prime areas. So DNR has been working on trying to figure out a way of allocating guide areas to people without being exclusive. They're looking at a plan of dividing the state, the guide use areas that are already on a map, into smaller concession areas and then having a prospective method of competing for those areas. And it's not exclusive. Some of them are multi-user areas, but it's more a way of separating people out so there's fewer conflicts between hunters and guides and locals. As far as I can see it, and not understanding, of course, how it's all going to be applied down to the end, I think it's necessary for both the experience of people in the out-of-doors and for maintaining our populations of animals in for maintaining guiding.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And Betty Jo, a couple of follow-up questions. What, number one, what enforcement measures do you have at your disposal, and which ones have you exercised?
Our board is able to, through the licenses, business licenses, we're able to pull people's siding licenses if the situation is bad enough. We're able to assess fines, able to put them sort of on a probation to be watched if they commit any other violations. And we've done all of those things.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions by the committee? Okay. Seeing none, let's open it up for public testimony. Is there anyone online wishing to testify regarding Betty Jo B.J. Schmitz? Okay. Hearing none, is there anyone in the room who'd like to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Is there any discussion? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Betty Jo. Schmitz, out of this committee and onto the full body with individual recommendations for the position of Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, seeing none. Ms. Schmitz, thank you again for volunteering to serve the state.
Thank you.
We'll forward your name on to the full body for confirmation vote.
Great.
Okay. Next, we have Paul Johnson, and he's an appointee also for the Big Game Commercial Services Board. Mr. Johnson, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. If you could put yourself on the record and tell us why you'd like to serve on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
My name's Paul Johnson. I've been a guide for over 35 years in Alaska. The state's been very, very good to me, and I believe in this state and its resources and its future, and feel that I can hopefully do the best I can to help the guiding and transporting industry move forward. And I hope that we can have this industry. It's a huge industry in our state, even though it's spread out, and I hope that we can have this industry for many, 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 many years to come. And I think it's a very important renewable resource that can be utilized and benefit to the residents of the state as well as to the public as a whole.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions by the committee members? Yes, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson, I've struggled for many years with my colleagues on the infrastructure needs in Southeast Alaska, and one of the challenges we had, is getting updated bios from you with your physical location in Elfin Cove. But Mr. Chairman, rarely do we see somebody that is honest in his dialogue with being married to Tammy and having three children. Wife has done a great job with the kids, Boy Scouts and schools. To be honest though, out of the last 56 years, I've drank a lot of beer and done a lot of hunting. Told a lot of stories, married a great gal, had great kids, and had too much fun. And he's also done a good professional job along the way. And Mr. Chairman, if we could all say that at age 56, I think that's something to be said.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. You care to comment on that, Mr. Johnson?
Probably. I can assure you that life's been very good to me. The state I was born in Juneau, and my family's been a resource-based family, clear back to my grandfather, and in Southeast Alaska, I've been fortunate to have worked with a lot of the old timers up in the Wood River and flew up there. I went to the University of Alaska, spent 23 years in Elfin Cove. I now live in Idaho Inlet. I'm looking today out at the most gorgeous scene you could possibly imagine of the Fairweather Range and the sparkling blue. I can't imagine life being any better.
Yes, Senator Stedman.
And for those, Mr. Chairman, thank you. For those that don't know, Idaho Inlet's a little bit east of Elfin Cove, which is on the upper end of Chichikov Island. So he doesn't have the communication, telecommunication ability that a lot of us have, updating resumes, and because we did get kind of a chuckle out of the dated resume from a previous administration.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, just editorial comments. You need to be careful who you're hanging out with. Number two, just, and yeah, and I'll spare you on a comment on that one, but I noticed that you graduated from high school in 1970, and you got your private pilot's license in 1970. My experience with the weather, it's impossible to be able to fly enough in Juneau, Alaska to get your license. Where'd you get your license?
I got my license in Homish, Washington.
Okay. It makes sense then.
I went down. Well, it's kind of interesting. Just real quick, we bought a Citabria, brand new 7GC DC, but Citabria, if you guys can imagine, for $9,400.
Wow.
Yeah.
That kind of covers.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Paul, thank you very much, and good luck to you in your tour of duty.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, seeing none, is open up for public testimony. Is there any public testimony regarding Paul Johnson online? Hearing none, anyone wishing to testify in the room? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Any discussion? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move the name of Paul Johnson out of this committee with individual recommendations onto the full body for a seat on the Big Game Commercial Services Board.
Any discussion? Any objection? Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll move your name on to the full body for consideration. And I just want to thank you for your years of service. And again, the state is lucky to have you. And Senator Stedman.
Just as a brief comment on a more serious note, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Johnson's been in the room here with the Resource Committee several times over the last few years. So most of us recognize him and his name. So it just took the opportunity to poke a little Southeast humor at him.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr.
And I'll work better on spending more time with my Labrador.
All right. Okay. Thank you. We're done with confirmations for today, and let's move on to SB 150, Emerging Energy Technology Fund. It's Senator McGuire's bill. And Senator, do you wish to present your bill, or would you prefer your aide?
He can come up. And we'll talk about it together. We had this in Senate Energy, so some of you here have already heard the bill. Basically, it creates a fund for emerging energy and technology. It's not funded within the bill itself. It's merely a structure to receive funds or to be funded should better times come on the horizon vis-a-vis oil prices. It is set up not as a dedicated fund, but rather, again, one that can receive funds should they be available. And it will be administered by the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, who will be online to talk about some of the things that we do. We know in our state that emerging energy technology is a really important part of our future. We have looked around at other jurisdictions and know that funds like these that provide seed monies end up being an attractive incentive for new renewable companies to come in. We know that it drives the existence of these kinds of funds, drive the attraction of grant dollars and the ability to co-partner with the federal government in matching grants. In recent years, the Department of Energy has offered millions in federal grants that typically require as low as a 20% cost share at the state level, and we feel that this fund is the kind of fund that could offer those matching dollars should we choose to take advantage of them. We know that in the stimulus package, there are also alternative energy opportunities, and we're hoping that this fund could serve as another mechanism to leverage and partner with those funds as well. One of the things that our office has been working on alternative energy throughout the year, and we brought forward the production tax credit for alternative energy. And certainly, as Senator Sedman's leadership and others on this committee got through the AEA
renewable energy grants to the tune of $100 million. And so there's been a lot of work out there, but one of the places that we think is missing in the equation is the research and development dollars, the really the seed part of where some of these ideas grow out of. When you look at the AEA grants that the Senate Finance Committee put into place, there you're talking about proven technologies, demonstrable technologies that are out in the field, and then a question of funding those projects throughout the state. This fund would be geared toward the research and development dollars that really happen more at the base level. We had at one point in Alaska's history an Alaska Science and Technology Fund, and there is some impetus in that fund's existence for this bill, although they're different. This is targeted specifically at emerging energy and the technology around that. But the idea behind that fund was, again, to inspire seed money, to inspire new innovations through a little bit of seed money from the government. You know, and again, we ask, what is the government's role? And oftentimes it's to get out of the way. Sometimes it's to incentivize. And in this case, getting funding for some of these emerging energy technologies can happen in the form of an angel investor, but often a government can be a good basis in terms of seed money. It's Trevor and I have worked through various drafts, and you can see the one that you have before you is set up with a 5-member board that would oversee the distribution and consideration of any monies that were appropriated out of the board. The basis for the board, the applicants, if you will, have to be people who have a background in energy, in engineering and technology and science. So we didn't want it to be a political board. We wanted it to be based in science and engineering so that it would be proven. That was one of the complaints back when the Alaska Science and Technology Fund was under consideration. Some people felt that the projects that were approved out of there were political or regional in nature and not necessarily provable. So we wanted to put as many belts and suspenders around it as we could. We also wanted to be sure that it was administered by an association that was separate from the university in the event that the university chooses to apply for any of these monies or a partner with the university does. So that was where we came up with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. Frankly, it could be administered out of a couple of other places, but we felt that these folks seem like the more likely place since they've been working in the area of alternative energy and energy for Alaska generally. And I'll just wrap up by saying, you know, once again, it does feel odd in this time when we're looking at a $1.3 billion potentially deficit in this year as compared to last year where all kinds of things were more possible. I'd like to see this legislation continue to move forward and get up to the Finance Committee where I understand we'll be looking at energy more broadly. I think it's the kind of tool that Alaska could have in place for those times where seed money seemed appropriate and was available. In particular, I think having a mechanism by which we can attract grants and receive in federal stimulus money and potentially take advantage of federal grants that are out there that require matching dollars. I think that is a good mechanism to have on the books. And so with that, I'll let Trevor fill in any gaps that I have or offer anything you want.
Okay, thank you. And I guess before we get too much further down the road, we're dealing with, there is a CS, and the latest version is /E. And is there any interest in a motion to adopt that?
So moved.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Is there any objection to that?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I might interrupt, yep. Actually, the latest version should be version S, Sierra.
That's what I have, yes.
Okay. If we could, can I get an amendment to the motion? Senator Huggins, if you could restate.
Amended to a version. You said X-ray? Sierra? Okay.
Thank you. Is there any objection to adopting version S?
I just need to get a copy of it.
Behind this
summary.
I've got it. Got it.
And Trevor, if you would.
The backslash S is adopted, and Senator McGuire, please.
Thank you. And through the chair, thank you. If Trevor, if you could just explain the considerations between last committee and this committee and what was adopted into version S.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. I'm staff for the sponsor of Senate Bill 150, Senator Lisa McGuire. I'll give you a quick summary of the changes that are in the CS version Sierra that's before you now. The first change was actually incorporated at your request, Mr. Chairman. You did express a bit of a concern that perhaps there was the possibility of funding projects that were maybe a little too far into the realm of science fiction here. So we added language that would specifically limit project eligibility to those projects that might become commercially viable within the next 5 years. So they don't necessarily have to be an off-the-shelf technology, but we want them to be working towards that direction within the next 5 years. The second change we made was to, as Senator McGuire pointed out, add that five-member committee, the advisory committee, so that there was a level of separation between the administering agency, which is the Alaska Center for Energy and Power, and the recipients of the grants. The model that we use, this five-member committee.
I'm sorry, just on the administering agency, I'm just a little fuzzy. It says here, and I'm on page 1, line 12, it says it shall be administered by the interdisciplinary research unit of the arm of the College of Engineering and Mines, the University of Alaska, known as the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. So that's who's going to do it. But I guess I thought I heard someone say that the idea was to provide some separation between the university and the administering unit in order to keep there from being any allegations of sort of self-dealing should the university be eligible for one of these grants.
Through the chair.
What am I missing?
Through the chair, Senator French. If you look at the membership of the committee there, and you're correct, the Alaska Center for Energy and Power is housed within the University of Alaska Fairbanks, so it is a university entity. If you look at page 2, line 28, through page 3, line 1, that is the makeup of the advisory committee, and there are no members of the university on that board.
It's administration versus advisory committee. Thank you. I missed a link there, and that clears it up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
French.
You. Thank you, Trevor. You could please continue.
The third and final change we made in this CS was to expand the definition of eligible applicants to include both private sector and nonprofit sector entities. When we were originally drafting the bill, we borrowed some language from the Renewable Energy Fund, and apparently the Renewable Energy Fund excludes some entities that we may want to include. And we do want to expand it to include private sector entities, because that's where these sorts of projects get a lot of their in-kind partnerships. A good example would be Gwen Holdman's project, that geothermal energy project that she worked on up in Cheetah Hot Springs, the first of its kind. Part of the equipment was donated by a large corporation. The acronym escapes me. They're called UTC. I don't remember what that stands for. But they produce the technology, and they, I believe, gave her a portion of it or the entirety of it for free as sort of an in-kind partnership deal. And we wouldn't want to exclude larger corporations such as UTC from this sort of a formula.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, just, Trevor, just could you give me an example of a quasi-government entity?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I do believe the university qualifies as a quasi-governmental entity, as does the Alaska Railroad.
Okay. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, seeing none, we have several people wishing to testify, and I know we've got two with time constraints, and we have Larry Persley here, but we've got Brian Hirsch online
just
first.
Oh,
okay.
Oops.
Okay. Let's go to Larry Persley then, and We're going to try to limit to 3 minutes if we have, because we do have a number of people wishing to testify. So, Larry, welcome to the committee, and please give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Larry Persley. I'm an aide to Representative Hawker in House Finance Committee, and I guess I'm here through the chair just to offer information as working on energy issues and federal funding issues, specifically the stimulus bill for the legislature. I guess wanted to offer the information that whereas much of the focus in the legislature the last few weeks has been on the energy provisions of the stimulus bill, the weatherization provisions, state energy program, the energy efficiency and conservation block grants, those deal with funding of off-the-shelf technology, home energy improvements and such, not research and development money that's coming to the state. But there are funding sources in the stimulus bill that deal with research and development, new technology, which something like this possibly could go for. Certainly there are proposals in the president's federal fiscal year 2010 budget and will be in budgets beyond as the nation looks more toward new technology, research and development, research and new technology in energy efficiency, more cost-effective ways to deliver energy. If the state wanted to get into the game, this is certainly one way to do that, to go after some of those grant dollars for science.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry, we're doing all these things with energy, and we don't have a state energy policy. Some of us are pushing for state energy policy. Do you see the necessity of us having an umbrella policy under which to operate before we get too many dangling participles under it?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, at risk of violating my instructions, which are to give information and not opinions.
We won't tell
that anybody. Wasn't my instructions.
No, that's when you're, those are other instructions.
Has that ever stopped you before?
As Senator Stevens points out, the state's energy policy is somewhat diverse. You have the Alaska Energy Authority with its role. You have the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, which is technically designated by the governor as the state energy office with the U.S. Department of Energy. You certainly have operations at the university. It would behoove the state to look at and coordinate those in one form or another.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Larry, and thank you for all the work you've done on the stimulus and kind of educating us. I know I've really come to rely on your emails and your advice on that, so thank you.
Thank you, and my boss said I get a commission. Everything you take, I get a piece. Thank you.
See if the finance co-chairs have anything to say about that. Okay, next up, let's go to Chris Rose online. Did we lose him?
She's got the big noise, just went up.
Oh.
No, okay. That's
what's left. Okay. Jason. Next up, we've got Jason Meyer from the Denali Commission.
Hi, this is Jason Meyer with the Denali Commission.
Please put yourself on. You put yourself on the record. Please give us your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason Meyer. I represent the Denali Commission. Currently, I am a Denali Commission fellow. I work in the Renewable and Alternative Energy Program at the commission, and then working to develop a renewable and energy alternative energy strategy for the commission. My testimony is just brief. I just wanted to summarize a couple points that we've given in testimony before. The Denali Commission is an independent federal agency designed to provide critical utilities, infrastructure, and economic support throughout Alaska. With the creation of the Denali Commission, Congress acknowledged the need for increased interagency cooperation and focus on Alaska's remote communities. And the Commission's energy program focuses on bulk fuel power plants and renewable alternative energy. Recently, the Commission's Energy Advisory Committee discussed strategy for continued investment in alternative and renewable energy. We also heard supportive testimony of our involvement in alternative and renewable energy development at our quarterly meeting last week in Juneau. The Commission has historically been involved in emerging technology pilot projects. Several projects of note include Eagle In-River Hydrokinetic, Chena Hot Springs Geothermal, and High Voltage Direct Current HVDC feasibility and prototype design. Without the investment of such emerging technologies, new options for energy in Alaska would be limited. We are tracking efforts related to emerging technologies that seem consistent with our renewable and alternative energy strategy, which currently includes roughly $10 million. We are currently developing a memorandum of understanding with the University of Alaska Center for Energy and Power and the National Renewable Energy Lab. Our goal is to leverage resources and expertise to support emerging technologies in Alaska in the hopes that successful new options can be developed and put to use. Thank you very much.
Jason, thank you for your testimony. And are there questions for Jason? Okay, seeing none. Next, we go to Paul Kendall. Welcome to the committee, Paul. You've got 3 minutes.
I didn't know I was on. What I'd like to do, if I might, is have my testimony last after you have some of your distinguished people that might be online, like Mr. Coase and a couple others.
You are last.
I am. Okay. Well, let me throw all my 3 minutes.
At least online.
Pardon?
You're last one that's online. I don't know if there's anyone here wishing to testify, but right. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, let me apologize for my last testimony before your board. I think I came down a little hard on the gas plant, a few things like that. But I'm concerned. I'm very concerned about AEA and where Mr. Haggerson is at, ladies and gentlemen. In 1981, you dropped several magnificent programs like OTEC and the hydrogen conversion of Old Harbor. And that happened across the board in multiple sectors of our economy around the world, it seemed like. And it seems like we're coming to that again. And let me tell you what I mean by that. It appears to me that what Mr. Haggerson has done is he's taken his people, the APA, the ADA, and some of his staff, which I'm still confused about who's where, and what they've done is they've learned their people up. There seems to be this indication of our leadership seems to think, oh, well, the general public doesn't need to know. So they pay for themselves to go through these technology classes. We're seeing the same thing in the school district, so that they can become these empowered people with knowledge, and then it's, well, all these little people just don't understand because they just wouldn't. And there's something really dark-sided about that, because you should be raising us all up. Mr. Haggerson should have had several things before us, as I mentioned yesterday. There should have been these type of annual shows where you would go and there would be presentations by generator manufacturers and solar panel and low voltage electric vehicles. We need those manufacturers here because of the opportunity we have to develop energy. And again, I realize this is a bit disjointed here, but I'm very busy and it's hard to participate with you folks when you're in Juneau. But when you look at talk about the Susitna project, which is 15 years out, or you look at the Chukchama where they've taken out the reinforcement of that multi-mile long tunnel, if that tunnel ever dropped or hiccuped, you drop that tunnel all the way through, after 10 years you'd have nothing. The truth is that our real partnership lies in waterways. The Cook Inlet, the Turnagain Arm, the Kinnick Arm, and various other bodies close in. And it can be immediate within 3 to 6 years. Whenever I see these new divisions like ASEP, what's happened is we have some people who know how to work it. We used to call it know how to work it, know how to work the system. They construct these nonprofit or these entities or bodies, and then they capture these funds, they bring them in-house, and then they go out to their elite group of people who they think they're special. And these same people now are having energy forms where you have to pay a lot of money to see them, but they're the product of our money to make them. The whole thing has just become perverse at best. And so what I'm concerned here is that Mr. Haggerson has not stepped up. He has not got a clear-cut mission to gather us as the people. And I just can't stress this enough in 11 seconds before I go into a closing here. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to see that something's wrong, and I'll close this up. I'm down 3 seconds, Mr. Wilkowski. You have the most powerful economy in the world telling you that we think we're on the edge, we're not sure what's happening. You have the world economy telling you that they're done and they need the United States. You have the economies in Alaska that we're concerned that we don't know where they're going. And then at the same time, you have a bunch of people going, oh, we're going to give you stimulus money. Don't worry about a thing.
Thanks, Paul. You know, could you wrap it up, Paul?
I am. If that's not bizarre, I can't imagine the sense of denial that I'm feeling from you folks. We should be coming back here and defining electricity as a primary direction that we all need to develop and coming to our homes to secure them with that energy quickly. And I thank you for your time and what you're doing there.
Paul, thank you. And I just want to let you know that I was just handed another sheet. We do actually have a couple people who we have online also.
Well, as long as it's not Chris Rose and Greek and some of those others, that's fine. But
okay.
If they're coming in behind.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Okay. Next up, we've got Catherine Keith. If you could put yourself on the record.
Yes, hello. This is Catherine Keith. I'm with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. I work with Wind Diesel Systems to help coordinate the efforts of Wind Diesel with the Wind Diesel Application Center, which was developed with partnerships between National Renewable Energy Lab, Alaska Energy Authority, and ASA. So having 3 minutes, I'll try to make this as brief as I can. We know, as we've discussed already, that Alaska energy is in the foremost of everybody's minds. Yet Alaska ranks 46th on research and development for renewable energy. Yet we have the highest energy costs and some of the most complex logistical issues in the U.S. And so to deal with these, we need to invest in energy projects, policy, and research. With 152, we've successfully addressed the energy projects. But 152 is not available to pre-commercial technologies, and AEA has no mandate or capability to engage in energy research. So I think the question should be asked, what type of research does exist in the state? And coming from a Wind Diesel background, I can speak to some examples, such as wind turbine verification, which could be successfully deployed in Arctic environments, energy storage systems, which are needed for high penetration wind diesel systems, and waste heat recovery. The utilities in rural Alaska are really struggling to find proven technologies that are beneficial to their communities without such a high risk factor. I've worked with Kotzebue Electric over the past couple of years, and they've been a leader in energy innovation, and they've looked aggressively at different solutions to supplement their diesel consumption, such as landfill gasification, waste heat recovery, waste heat power generation, energy storage, electric vehicles. I could go on, but each of these technologies is considered pre-commercial and it's not eligible for state funding. Yet each of these technologies offers great promise to those communities. One good example would be the vanadium redox flow battery, which would help stabilize high penetration wind systems that we have in Wales and St. Paul Island, for example. The University of Alaska has a flow battery to verify the performance in the bush, and this is yet without research and development funding. The Arctic Energy Technology Development Lab needed to purchase this with leftover overhead funding, and was not this type of equipment is not eligible for funding under House Bill 152, so Kotzebue Electric was not able to go forward with their project. Yet this is really critical technology. This VRB battery is sitting at UAF right now, but there's no funding to analyze the data from that equipment. So the Alaska Center for Energy and Power is already involved in programs to test new battery systems, waste heat recovery devices, and hydrokinetic turbines, with the goal being to ensure manufacturer claims are accurate and to ensure that these systems will perform in Alaska. After the Chena Hot Springs geothermal plant was installed, a lot of attention was paid to this type of technology. And when the Alaska Center for Energy and Power investigated this further, a lot of these claims were not being realized in the field and should not be invested in at this time. And because of that research, Alaska Energy Authority was able to prevent funding on a frustrating project. However, this technology is really, again, critical and needs to be invested in. So this emerging technology fund will allow projects like this to be proven in Alaska for Alaska communities. So to sum up, there's 3 points I'd like to make. I'd like to put a sense of urgency on this in consideration of available federal funds. Organizations like ASAP, when we utilize Department of Energy funding, there's a 20% cost share, as we know. So $1 million of state funds could be leveraged for an additional $4 million in federal funding. Secondly, House Bill 150 should be considered a sister program to 152. Efforts in emerging technology will ensure greater success with existing and future 152 projects. And lastly, there are research programs in the lower 48 that do exist, but please don't consider those at all appropriate for Alaska. We have such unique conditions here. National Renewable Energy Lab has their wind verification test site, but they would like an Alaska Wind Diesel Center because our remote wind diesel systems are drastically different from the wind farms in Iowa, for example. So I just encourage your support of this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Appreciate your testimony. Next up, we have D. Douglas Johnson. Mr. Johnson?
Hello.
Okay, could you put yourself on the record, and you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is, for the record, this is Doug Johnson. I'm the Alaska Projects Director for Ocean Renewable Power, and we're currently working on two projects here in Alaska, one Ocean Energy Project and one River Energy Project. And I'm speaking on behalf of this Emerging Energy Technology Fund because our company wouldn't be where we are today had we not received funds from similar agencies in the state of Maine and the state of Massachusetts that had the foresight to develop these energy technology funds. And we're moving forward with our project here in Alaska because of those funds that were set up in other states. I was just to follow up for the previous speaker, I really believe that this fund is something that Alaska needs now. It's something that we can use now, and it's something that's unique to our state. You know, we're one of the few places in the world that have the full suite of renewables available to us. And to be able to fully utilize that suite of renewables, we've got to understand the technology it's going to take to do that. And we really have the opportunity to be a leader here. There's tremendous amount to do in my arena, in the Ocean and River arena. There's tremendous optimization technologies to be developed and working with those, and we need a place and a fund to be able to do that. We're currently working with the Alaska Center for Energy and Power on our project on the Tanana River in Indiana for the Hydrogenetic Testing Center. And I have, you know, tremendous confidence in that, in ASAP and their ability to administer this fund should we be able to put it together. And I think it's important and really valuable to the state in the long term that we do this. As you know, Captain spoke, we've got the VRB or VRF battery project, and that's another one that's really imperative to storage and understanding that. There's the whole learning about and understanding the CHP with biomass, combined heat power, the low temperature geothermal that we've been seeing being demonstrated at Chena Hot Springs, wind turbine optimization, and transmission. These are all areas that need further research. And this fund is exactly what we need to be able to move that forward. And it is really the opportunity for a wonderful public-private partnership. And I just wanted to speak in favor of it and like the idea that there's potentially some stimulus money out there that might be coming our way. And with a 1-to-4 ratio for every dollar the state puts in, it's a really good deal for Alaska. So the faster we can move on this, from my perspective, the better. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Doug. And seeing no questions, next up is Kate Troll.
Thank you, Chairman Wilkowski. My name is, for the record, Kate Troll, Executive Director of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, which is an umbrella organization representing 40 conservation groups in the state. I also serve on the board for the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, for REAP. I'm here to testify in strong support of passing Senate Bill 150 for many of the reasons that people have already commented on, but I will highlight a few other points. And I think it's important that people realize that right now the clean energy business in the world is looked at as a $55 billion a year industry. It's one of the very few bright spots in today's slumping economy, and it's a projection that, you know, this figure will quadruple by, you know, 2015. So by Alaska setting up this fund, not only do we position ourselves to leverage some federal funds, but I think we also position ourselves to leverage a lot of private investment interest in this growing industry. And as Doug pointed out, we have just tremendous fast renewable resources, uncomparable to other states, but yet we need to be positioned to be a first mover. For example, despite the fact that Alaska has 75% of the nation's wave energy potential, Oregon, through its research institute at Oregon State, already sort of has the first mover advantage on wave power in the United States. You know, we should take that back with this fund, and we could be the first mover on tidal energy. And most importantly, I think we could be the first mover on a lot of these hybrid systems. You know, people don't realize that our 220 remote villages currently serve as a vast laboratory for wind diesel hybrid, for in-river hybrid, you know. And this is a technology that the developing world is definitely going to need. No other state has so many communities off-grid that could be a model for parts of the world that are going to need the smaller-scale distributed energy systems. So, I think it's just an exciting opportunity for Alaska to, you know, establish itself as an energy leader for the new energy economy, and really encourage you to pass this. And I want to also echo the fact that it complements 152, and it protects the integrity of House Bill 152, because that bill was aimed at ready-to-go projects, and we don't really want to weaken the integrity of 152 by mixing in potentially not quite ready for prime time projects. And by separating the funds and establishing this, we not only carve ourselves a new edge, but we protect the integrity of 152. And with that, I'll say thank you very much for putting this bill before us, and really encourage prompt action, and hopefully that it will get through this session, because I think we need to do it now to position ourselves for the federal funds down the line. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kate. And is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Hearing none, is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, seeing none, we're going to close public testimony on this. It's our intent to hold the bill and take it up again and hopefully move it on Friday. So with that, meeting is adjourned.